Hello, my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a senior program manager in Microsoft Corporation. In this particular video, we were going to concentrate on how to control branding in a SharePoint using the add-in model, or the so-called app model. And this is a guidance which applies for both Office 365 and SharePoint on-premises, especially in the on-premises when you don't want to use the farm solutions. So we're going to start with an introduction section. So we're going to go through the introduction to the topic and why is this actually important and why is this actually something what we want to talk about. We're going to have a closer look on the theming and other branding techniques. So there are multiple different ways of doing customizations or applying custom branding within the sites using the app model or adding model techniques. We kind of slightly have a chat related on controlling publishing capabilities. So if you do have publishing functionalities enabled and you do want to use a custom master page, so let's talk about that one in that section as well. And then the final section is more about how do we actually update the existing site. So obviously, whenever we manipulate the branding within the sites, you might have tens of thousands of site collections. You really want to think through how do you then modify the branding within those site collections. And now, especially within the add-in model, this is slightly different compared to the classic farm solution approaches, which might have taken within the on-premises within the past. Let's start with a quick developer vision for the adding model and for the Office 365 in general. And this again applies to on-premises as well. We really want to make sure that individual users of users who are using SharePoint or Office in general, any of the Office applications, including the SharePoint and Office 365 services, can actually access the data in multiple different ways and using multiple different devices and techniques. There's multiple different ways of exposing individual applications and individual apps and build customizations on all of these different Office applications. There's actually 1.2 billion users in Office worldwide, so this is absolutely a big opportunity for developers to look into. And there's available store capabilities for also publishing those functionalities. So obviously, when I think about this from a ISV or product development perspective, this is a great opportunity. At the same time, if you think about this from an enterprise customization, enterprise development perspective, these individual capabilities could be just could be actually related on enterprise functionalities. So just as well, even though you don't actually put your application within the store, we absolutely recommend to have a look on the adding model and app model in general, so you are aligned with these approaches and where the innovation will happen in the future as well. Now, before we actually go to the presentation or more detailed on the presentation and the slides, this is the one slider which has actually combined all of the needed knowledge within this presentation. So as a summary on things, we really want to make you aware of an implication of the custom master pages. And the conclusion of that one is that you should avoid them. The default approach shouldn't be a custom master page. Custom master pages are absolutely supported in on-premises and Office 365 in the SharePoint context. Still in the future, but it has implications, and therefore they're not necessarily the best approach which you might have been thinking when you need to do, let's say, a small amount of branding. If you need to do a significant changes within the UI, the custom master page is absolutely still the way to go. The use Office 365 themes when possible, and this absolutely applies in the cloud. We don't have this capability within the on-premises. And what it means is that in the cloud, you're able to go to a tenant administrative UI and actually control a minimal set of settings and branding settings, which will be applied across all of the services within Office 365. So not just with SharePoint service. And that's a really big thing to remember. So when I think about branding, and when I think about branding of SharePoint within the, especially in Office 365, we need to remember that there's quite a lot of other services there as well. We need to balance that with a change management and the impact for the end users. consider using alternate CSS. This alternate CSS is a capability where we are able to attach, using the adding model or app model techniques, a custom CSS as part of the rendering within the site level without actually creating a custom master page. So it's quite common actually that the branding requirements are related on certain color changes or small relocations of elements or hiding elements. And it's actually much better from a future perspective to apply those customizations using the alternate CSS approach rather than actually using a custom master page. And then we do have those SharePoint themes. You absolutely can use them to control color and fonts and background image within the sites as well. Supported way and absolutely the right way to do if you're looking into that level of a customizations. This is a common kind of a statement which some of the people every now and then do when we talk about the SharePoint branding, which is that you don't brand actually Outlook or Word or the Office client. Why do you need to do branding on a collaboration sites? And it is absolutely a fair question, and it's something to consider or think about. So applying the branding is absolutely supported, and it's quite common. It's absolutely understandable that you want to do that for intranet portals. But then is there actually enough value of applying a highly customized branding to collaboration sites? Because when you think of it, collaboration sites are more as a tool how to access and how to use and how to collaborate with the end users. So it's a slightly different scenario, slightly different use case than actually the classic intranet portals, which absolutely can use the master pages in the future as well. So, but it's one of those questions, there's really no right or wrong answer. What we recommend definitely is think about the investment, what needs to be happening for the custom branding, and is it then a worthwhile compared to the value, what it's actually providing within the context of the SharePoint sites and SharePoint functionality. So let's actually move on to introduction section of the deck. So let's get actually started on these things. So a lot of our recommendations are based on the thinking that how do we actually minimize the future maintenance? So how do we avoid the fact that we're making bi-weekly releases or we introduce constantly new capabilities and new innovations is happening within the Office 365. And that's where this guidance is actually coming from. So if you would be using themes rather than custom master pages, you would be actually getting all the changes and improvements to Artox master pages automatically within your sites. So you don't actually need to go and deploy a specific updates to your master pages. And that's why we actually say quite openly that custom master pages is not necessarily the right option. The second dimension on the discussion is that, okay, how do I actually deploy the stuff within the SharePoint sites? And the reality is that we're moving away from the feature framework element usage. We used to use feature framework the module element especially for deploying individual assets to their site collections. So now in the future, we would rather want to think about using the remote APIs, meaning the client-side object model and RESTful APIs to upload, for example, these assets, the JavaScript files and CSS files to the right locations within a site collection, just using a few lines of code, which will, as a conclusion, it will actually make sure that your content, which essentially those CSS files are within a content database, are not dependent on any of these random XML files stored within a file system or deployed as a sandbox solutions. So there is a clear direction and recommendation to actually start avoiding this feature framework elements or sandbox solution or farm solutions in general. So why do we actually talk about what is the issue and what is the challenge or innovation or changes what we are introducing within the custom master page? So let's have a look on this one from one specific angle. Whenever we released an RTM version of the SharePoint, this is actually the master page how the top section, suite bar, whatever you want to call that, was looking at the RTM timeframe, so the initial release of SharePoint 2013. At some point in Office 365, we actually changed some of the master page settings and we changed some of the other settings as well, but more specifically, There was a new control introduced on the page, and it's actually started rendering that the content slightly differently. So you can see additional links on the top bar. There's the three dots where you can actually open up an additional set of menu with an additional functionalities. Obviously, due numerous reasons and direction where we're heading with Office 365 and Azure AD Dimension on this one as well, we wanted to come up with a solution where we can add custom applications, and we don't want to be tight on the width of the top bar to have those links and solutions listed. That's one of the reasons why the App Hub was actually released. So this is how the Office 365 look right now when this video was recorded, and then you're able to add your own custom applications to be visible within that app suite or app launcher. So what's really important to realize also, especially when we talk about Office 365, is that Office 365 is not just about SharePoint. If you have a look on those products which are listed on the app launcher, we're able to see Outlook, Calendar, People, Yammer, OneDrive, Project Tasks, Power BI, Delve, and a lot of other applications which are actually also there. And there's no custom Masterpages concept with them. The majority of them are supporting Office 365, and there's a plans to introduce additional set of branding capabilities for their services. But it's really important to realize that even though we would do branding and high-level customization changes within a SharePoint, for example, the Delve on the left side or the Yammer on the right side, these wouldn't be impacted by those customizations. So there's no alternate CSS, there's no site-level theming, there's no custom Masterpages capabilities within Office 365 services other than within a SharePoint. So looking that one in a slightly different perspective, so if we think about, for example, this kind of a SharePoint, typical SharePoint collaboration sites, which have been which in this case has been customized with a custom theming. So there's a custom theme with the background image and a custom logo set on the page. And we can do pretty hectic customizations. This is really simple because it's using the theme, but we could do much more within a SharePoint site. But like mentioned on a previous slide, you cannot actually do that within the Yammer. And especially in Office 365 or in Delve. In Office 365, the end users will be accessing individual services one by one. They don't just stay within the SharePoint site. And when they do that, there is a implication or visual implication on the changes or the branding implication, how things are presented. So it's a really good really, really important to realize that you understand the level of an impact on a branding from a SharePoint perspective, and then also the impact for the end users when the end users are moving across these individual services. You might be asking that, okay, so what is actually the challenge with the custom Masterpages? So what is that issue, what we're referring into? And this is a slide which is trying to explain this one in practice. We've mentioned that a few times already within the video, but let's have a detailed look on this one. So how does it actually work? So typically what happens when you create a custom Masterpages is that you take Seattle.master or some out-of-the-box master and you start modifying them. There are absolutely exceptions as well to this process, but this is the typical way how we actually create the custom Masterpages. So we copy the Seattle.master or from the Office 365 or from a one-time time spot in well in a one time in a one sentence a certain specific time sequence. We actually get the Seattle.master, we modify that, we introduce the Contoso master, and we start using that within the team sites. Now, after a while, what will happen is that we from the Microsoft we continue releasing new capabilities and new functionalities to the Seattle.master as an example. So we release a new Seattle.master version 2.0. Well, technically in SharePoint Office 365, in a SharePoint site, we are already running the SharePoint 2016 Masterpages, which is a version 16. But you might think this from as a version, a new version compared to the previous version of the Seattle.master. So there's innovation. We want to introduce new capabilities. We want to get them refreshed and essentially we update that CI.master into Office 365 service. All of those sites which are now using Contoso.master, they are not actually impacted, or they don't actually get those new functionalities. And after a while, you will have a significant difference, obviously, comparing the compared to CI.master compared to the Contoso master. You might be taking this as a knowingly decision, which is absolutely fine. We just really want to pinpoint the fact that there might be then significant differences on the outcome, unless you start updating the Contoso master frequently, which will then cost additional maintenance costs for you. If that's a decision what you want to take, that's absolutely fine. We just want to make sure that that decision is taken knowingly, that this is the way we introduce the changes within Office 365 platform. And this, in some level, this actually applies also for on-premises. So even though in on-premises we don't push master page changes all the time, but we do push master page changes with the major version releases of SharePoint. If your SharePoint is using a theming engine, those sites which are using a theming engine won't be impacted as heavily as using a custom master page. So there are considerations to think through. Which is the right option for you and which of the routes you actually want to take. Typically, we hear also the comment that, hey, wait, so what? We have always customized my sites, the SharePoint sites, with the custom master page. What has changed? And nothing actually has changed. So we do have the exact same similar maintenance challenges as we had in the past as well, or what you would have in the on-premises. So it's really about us clearly indicating the direction where we are heading and opening up this for the discussion. We've also seen quite often that people are creating custom master pages, even though they're doing minimal changes within the UI, which could have been able to done using an alternate CSS. So absolutely evaluate options and to choose the right option based on the business requirement and what's actually truly needed. So the default option should not be the fact that I'm creating a custom master page. This one we actually already kind of covered on the introduction side. So how should I actually get my files uploaded to the SharePoint sites using Sandbox? And the answer is actually no. We are recommended start using a remote provisioning patterns and using the remote APIs, because this will make sure that your assets, like the master pages, if you're using them, or CSS or page layouts or whatever you're deploying using Sandbox solution, don't have a dependency on this Sandbox solution or feature XML files. So now if somebody will go and deactivate or activate those features, that doesn't actually have a significant impact for you. And just to reinforce the message, I have an intranet portal, I need to do heavy branding and customizations, and that's absolutely supported. We're not taking that capability away. The key point is to understand the impact of that that chosen path or the chosen pattern. So they're absolutely supported. You just need to be aware how things are evolving in the Office 365. So you understand and get prepared for the possible maintenance, what needs to happen within your portal sites. So let's move on those individual capable alternatives. So what we can do then if we cannot actually use, or if I wouldn't be using custom master page. One of the options is the themes, so SharePoint themes, which are providing branding elements without introducing master page or page layouts elements. So we're not actually introducing a custom master. We are essentially still using then the out-of-the-box master pages, but we can introduce a color, a font, or a background images for the sites. And in some cases, this might be sufficient, or this might be exactly what's needed, and nothing more is actually added, needs to happen. And in that case, the theming is absolutely the recommended option. If you're wondering on how do you actually create those custom themes, we do have a free tool, free downloadable tool from the Microsoft download site called SharePoint Color Palette Tool version 1.0.0. And this is the tool which you can use extremely easily to create a custom themes, which you can then deploy to the sites using the remote provisioning pattern. And what does that actually mean in practice? So many of these processes and the logical designs are actually looking pretty much the same. We do have the SharePoint signed somewhere, and then we have that second tool. It might be a provider-hosted add-in or app. It might be a console application. It might be something which we execute as part of the site collection provisioning automatically. But the whole point is that that code actually, which is about to be executed, and which is the one which is calling those remote APIs, is executed somewhere outside of the SharePoint. So our app model implementation is then using the CSAM and RESTful APIs or RESTful APIs to upload the needed files to the right locations, which is the replacements for the module element in the feature framework. And then it can set the theme to the site. If needed, it can absolutely set the master page to the site as well. So this way, the site doesn't actually even have know that it's well. It knows that it has customizations, but they're not deployed using the feature framework elements, and there are no risks for anybody to deactivate sandbox solutions or feature framework features. So let's actually have a quick look on this particular example and demo. All of these demos are available from the Patterns and Practices guidance. So there's a link within the underneath the demo title where you can go and download the code or use the Git tooling to actually get the code, updated code for you to use. Hello. In this video, we'll have a look on how we can use a custom branding or custom theme to apply custom branding on any of the existing sites. This particular demo is part of the Patterns and Practices guidance for Office 365, and it's applicable and valid also for on-premises. The sample name is branding.theme, and it's actually a scenario. Scenario in Patterns and Practices guidance means that it's actually taking advantage of the core component to abstract the complexity of CSAM needed for the operations. And we're going to obviously have a look on what's executed within the core component as well. This is a typical Patterns and Practices guidance sample or scenario where we have the separate documentation which is explaining what that sample is doing. It's a provider-hosted sample, and it has its own application project. So that is the provider-hosted sample, which is hosted in either in Microsoft Azure or in IIS server within the on-premises. So I'm going to do an F5 and deployment of this one so we can actually see how things are then moving and working in practice. I've already deployed this once to the site, so there's no trust icons, and the deployment has already completed before, so that will speed up the process slightly because we want to really concentrate on the theming handling rather than on the deployment of an application. This is also a typical Patterns and Practices sample. It's a relatively simple and it concentrates on showing you the exact capability. So in real life, you'd absolutely apply the custom branding as part of your site provisioning. But in this case, we have two different buttons within the provider-hosted application site, which we can use to control the needed code. So the first one is that we're able to set a theme to the host web. So we're able to select any of some of the custom themes. I'm going to actually, for example, choose a green, and I'm going to run a scenario one. And I do have a breakpoint waiting within my code to see what's actually happening within the scenario one click. So what do we do here is that we open up get a context to the host web. So we're using the create user client context for SharePoint host. And then we take an instance to the web object from the client context. We're checking what is the selected value. So it's green. And then we're actually applying that or calling the core component, which is abstracting all the needed CSAM to apply that custom theme to the site. So I'm going to actually move into the core component. I'm going to slightly zoom in the code. And we can have a look on what's happening here. So first of all, we set those default values for a few variables. We have a look at the name value does exist. We will load the composite looks list from the site. And then we have a look on or we're querying that one particular item with that right name. In this particular, the look name was cream. And now that we have that one item, we will have a look on these properties which we have on the item. So I'm going to quickly zoom up. Here we go. So we'll have a look on, for example, the theming URL. And if theme URL actually exists, like in this case, we will take that to a local variable. And then I'm going to scroll, collect all of the other properties there as well. So I'm going to scroll down here to a lower section and execute and skip all of the other variable settings. Then we set a master page based on the URL that theme is using to Seattle.master, the out-of-box Seattle.master. It's setting that property to the site level. It's also setting the custom master page property to the site level, and then it sets a theme by a URL. Essentially what it does is that it applies that theming setting to the site. And there we go, based on the settings what we collected within the theme. So by executing the code, the host web will be set to use that out-of-the-box theme called Green, and we can absolutely go and have a look on the site whenever the execution is completed. The applyment of theme actually takes a relatively long time because whenever we select the theme and apply to the site, we are creating on the SharePoint create CSS files on fly for decorating the site when it's rendered. And that's the reason why a theme handling is not necessarily the most performant option and the performant or the most fastest option to apply a theme. And there we go. Now we are able to see that the site is looking completely different than the out-of-the-box dev site. It is using the green theme. You're able to see that branding settings applied to the site. Now, typically, obviously, you don't want to use any of the out-of-the-box themes. You want to rather deploy a custom theme. And that's what the other scenario here is actually showing. So we're deploying another deploy theme elements to the host site, and then we're adding that custom theme to the site as well. So I'm going to run scenario 2. I do have a breakpoint waiting. And let's have a look on what's actually happening within the code. So zooming this slightly, and there we go. We're calling an extension method from the core component called upload theme file, and I'm going to actually jump into that code and let's see what happens here. We are getting the local path to the file and making sure we are reading that stream of the local file, and then we're actually uploading the theme file to the right location. So essentially what it means in this case is that we take an instance to the theme folder, and then we upload the file to the theming folder itself. I'm going to actually quickly take a breakpoint there and then jump to the actual uploading operation, which is in here. So the core component has a lot of checks and a lot of validations that all of the information is properly valid and given the needed parameters have been given properly. But essentially what happens now is that we're uploading SPC theme, SP color file, we override if the existing exists, do some logging, and then we execute the query, and that's it. Essentially, these five steps of these five lines of code is essentially same as the module element within the feature framework usage. And let's go back on the calling factor. There we go. The file has been uploaded, and we're good to go. And then I'm going to actually run this create composite look on moving forward. And there we go. Let's get rid of that breakpoint as well, and that breakpoint as well. So we're uploading two files. The other one was the background image, and then we apply a web.create composite look by name. Essentially, what we do here is that we're creating composite look ID, an entry to the composite look list for the future usage. And then the following step is actually setting that theming using the set composite look by URL, which is the exact same thing what we used in the button click one. So we're adding again or applying that custom theme to the site. And that's going to take a while, like mentioned. But then it's essentially now recreating the CSS files, recreating the content. Or the files which are rendered as an output in the HTML. And when the execution will complete, we are able to see a slightly modified host web with the right theme or the custom theme, which have been now deployed using the remote APIs to the site itself. So this functionality would be absolutely included in your site provisioning process. So you would actually upload the needed theme files and CSS files and whatever background images needs to happen to your site as part of your site provisioning. So it would be automatically there and nobody would have to click a button to make this happen. But as you can see, it's a nice looking theme, which is using the SharePoint Conference 14 colors and some background image on the background as well. Relatively simple but extremely efficient way to apply your needed custom branding to existing sites in a simplistic way. And we absolutely take still advantage of the out-of-the-box master page, so there won't be any maintenance challenges whenever the out-of-the-box master page is evolving with the newer versions within the Office 365. And that's all we're going to do in this video, so thanks for your time, and hopefully that was helpful. Moving on to the Office 365 themes. So Office 365 themes is something what you can control from the UI of the Office 365. So in the Office 365 tenant administrator or administrative tools, you're able to go and modify these individual settings. And the key point here is that this actually is providing branding across individual services. So not just about the SharePoint, also for Yammer and Delve and OneDrive for Business Sites. But it's slightly limited. You can control the company-wide default branding settings from the administrative services, like mentioned. The SharePoint sites use this Office 365 themes if that specific, if the site doesn't have a SharePoint theme applied. So you're able to kind of mix and match as well. If you want to use the Office 365 themes across all of your other services, and then you want to have more specific customization in your SharePoint sites, that's possible to do as well. Personal theming option can be disabled by tenant administrator if needed. So, and this comes down on the fact that individual end users, they do actually have a theming capability in Office 365 as well. But there's a control or control is there or it's coming where the tenant administrator can actually disable these personal theming options so that you can provide an enterprise level consistent branding across all of your services if needed. And this is how the UI is looking at the time of the video. So you're able to set the custom logo, you're able to set some of the colors, background images for the top bar, and for example, the URL for clickable logo. The key point here to understand is that this mainly controls the top bar section on the page. Some of the services are actually applying or taking some of these settings into use also within inside of their content. It slightly depends on which Office 365 we are talking about. And let's actually have a quick look on just to show where this capability is available within the tenant administrator UIs and how you can use that to modify the end user experience. Hello. In this video, we'll have a look on the Office 365 themes and how we can use them to control the behavior or the branding in some level across individual services in Office 365. Right now, I'm in my dev site, and the easiest way to get access on the Office 365 themes is to go to your administrative site. So let's go to my admin site using the app launcher. So I'm going to click to admin. So I'm actually getting to my admin site, and from the admin site, we're able to then access this Office 365 theme settings. Here we go. And in my left navigation, we can see a company profile, click location, or in the top right corner, we can see the Contoso edit. Either way, you will land on the same exact same page. And within the page, we're able to modify the organizational names and organizational information. But what's actually more interesting is the custom theming. So this is now right now set to use out-of-the-box custom theming, but we're able to then modify some of these colors and some of the settings, whatever we like, based on the business requirements and based on the look and feel, what's relevant for your site itself. So as an example, we might do something really funky and modify the location looking like this one. So we do have a purple and yellow and a black changes within the theme, and clicking the save. And this will actually take a while to get reflected across individual services. But as a rule of thumb, now if we go to the Delve as an example, we will see that the Delve is actually applying or using the same theming settings which we were setting in an administrative UI. So it slightly again depends on the service type, how the service is actually, or which services you're using from Office 365, how fast that will adapt the change in the top bar on the suite bar navigation. But as you can see, it only controls the higher level navigation and higher level settings based on those configurations which we're applying in the admin UI. And I can easily modify that slightly more. I could add a background image on the top bar as well, or I could actually modify or add an icon there with the company logo in the top bar as well, which will be then consistent across individual services within Office 365. So I'm going to click right now, remove custom theming, so that we get to the normal out-of-the-box status, and then we're able to continue the working from there. And that's really quick introduction on Office 365 theming, where is it actually available, and how you can actually see that, and how it reflects across individual services within your Office 365 deployment. Moving on to alternate CSS, and what's that and what we can actually do with that one. An alternate CSS is a capability where we are able to attach an alternate CSS styling or alternate CSS file, which will be then included in the web or site rendering. So essentially, you're able to then add a custom style elements on the base rendering process, and whatever the CSS is actually defining, then the UI will be changed based on the CSS. And this absolutely can provide more comprehensive changes on a page layout, not related on page layouts and a publishing site, on the site page layout or the UX in general, compared to what the SharePoint themes can do without again introducing a custom master page. And this is one of those things which are exposed based on the community input. So based on the need and requests from the community, alternate CSS URL web property or the property has been enabled in a web object in the CSM level or in the REST level. And this gives us then the capability of adding and custom CSS to the rendering logic of individual pages or actually all of the pages within the site where that property has been set. The property is in the web level, meaning individual site. It's not actually within the site collection level, at least for time being. And how do we actually make this happen? Pretty much the same story as with the theming engine. We have to have something which is running the code outside of the SharePoint. It could be a provider hosted application, it could be a console application, it could be a PowerShell, it could be whatever needed. But the key point here is that tool is uploading the CSS to the right location, and then it sets the CSS for the alternate CSS property for the site. And then that can actually provide pretty significant UI changes within the site rendering. So it can actually do even relocation of elements within the page, or for example, like in this particular example, it's aligning the page in the center, not on the left side of the browser window. And let's have a quick demo on this one as well, like with the theming. So let's have a look on how that can be happening or done in practice. We upload the CSS, we set the site logo in the same demo as well, and then the site UI, site rendering is reflected based on these changes. Hello, in this video we'll have a look on how we can take advantage of alternate CSS URL and modify the branding of a site using custom CSS and in the level of whatever the CSS can actually override or provide within the UI. This is one of the patterns and practices branding examples named as branding alternate CSS and site logo. So it's also showing how to change the site logo within the site using remote APIs. And this is a provider hosted application like many of our patterns and practices guidance, and it's showing the business logic for those two different properties. In real life, you would associate this needed business code as part of your site provisioning. So as part of your site provisioning for site collections, so subsite, you would set these settings accordingly using then a console application, PowerShell, or whatever is your chosen model for applying your branding within your custom site collections. So let's do an F5. I already deployed this application to my dev site. And this is from a UI perspective, this is extremely simple application. And I already have that breakpoint waiting on the code as well. So from a UI perspective, there's actually two buttons, apply a scenario and clear logo and custom CSS. So this, like mentioned, this is not meant to be used as such within your production. It shows a pattern which you can adapt or include it among your own customization or as part of your site provisioning, which is the typical model where these things are actually applied. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to click the run scenario and let's walk through the code slightly. So how do we actually make these things happen? So first of all, we need to get the CSS and the image to the other side. I'm going to quickly show you where the image is currently located. So these two things in my provider hosted application are the ones which we are using within to modify the site. So they're actually hosted in my provider hosted application site. So what we need to do is to use the remote APIs to actually upload them to the site. And in this case, we're using English sites. So bear in mind, obviously, if you're using a non-English site collections, this particular URL would have to be changed in a slightly different way. But that's not the key point of the example. It's more about how do we set those properties and upload the needed files. So we take the instance to the Contoso CSS. We read all the bytes from the Contoso CSS, and then we override the settings so we're able to actually override if we do any updates in our CSS to the site. And there we go, the file has been uploaded to the site. So essentially, these six lines of code is the same thing as module element within the feature framework approach. But now you are able to clearly indicate and checking the code and debug the code, is it going the right direction and is the settings properly applied. And there we go, there goes our image and the logo, which will be set as a property to the site as well. And then the only thing what we need to do is to set the web.alternate.css and web.site.logo.url accordingly and to point to those files which are already uploaded to the right library. In this case, we uploaded those files to the site assets library. You could just as well upload them to a hidden folder or a site style library or site style library folders within your site collection as well. It really depends on where do you want to store them. They could be actually also stored outside of the SharePoint as well in a content delivery network. And as we can see, custom CSS and logo has been applied to the host web. And let's open up the host web. So we're able to see the clear difference in our dev site collection, how it's actually rendering itself. And as you can see, well, the design itself is not pretty, but it's actually indicating and showing a clear difference. And the alignment has been centralized. We've done some additional, in quotes, branding configurations. We even relocated some of the controls and some of the functionalities. So you're able to see, for example, that area has been relocated within the site. It's typically underneath the search, and now it's actually relocated in a different location. So using the CSS, you can actually do much more than just compare to the custom themes within a SharePoint. You can do also additional modifications. You can actually go to the level that with the CSS, you provide a responsive experience where the CSS is then controlling based on the device attributes how the page will adapt the resolution of the used device. And just to show you this one in practice, so I'm going to actually go back on the code itself. It's pretty significantly different. I'm going to do clear logo and custom CSS. So let's actually clear the settings. That doesn't take that long. The good thing about these operations is that this is extremely fast operation. We're just adding the CSS to the site and setting that property, and we immediately are seeing that significant difference on the site. So this is an out-of-the-box themes, out-of-the-box dev site. If I go here and update the page, you're able to see the same reflected change on the site. But with that custom CSS which we applied to the site, we were able to apply pretty significant branding changes also, well, across the whole layout. And that's all we're going to do in this video, so thanks for your time. Let's then talk about the branding with publishing sites. So like mentioned a few times, if you should choose that master pages are right for you, so based on evaluating those individual options, you want to make sure that the master pages are the right thing for you, and you're fine with the ongoing potential maintenance, then we really want to make sure that you actually combine these options. So combine, for example, the master page option, the theming option, or alternate CSS option. So do only those changes within a custom master page which is actually needed to be happening in a custom master page level, and then apply the CSS, alternate CSS, or the branding other things using the alternate CSS option or the theming option. And this is because then if you need to reset, in quotes, reset the site, you're able to switch the site to the Seattle.master as an example, and that would have a minimal impact for your site. This could be related on major version upgrades or whatever is happening within the future from a maintenance perspective. Also, we recommend that master pages are deployed directly using the remote APIs rather than using sandbox solution. And it's kind of awkward even that the design packages are actually sandbox solutions. They do have certain maintenance challenges because there's no tool or there's no really an upgrade story for sandbox solutions. Sandbox solutions, when you deploy the files using sandbox solutions, you will there's a, the upgrade story and updating of those files usually requires anyway code. So then using the code in the first place for deploying those assets on the right location will actually reduce your long-term costs and overall costs related on the deployment. And how do we actually do this? We have again that external provider hosted add-in or functionality, whatever is hosting the code. It could be again PowerShell or something else. That's having the branding assets. It's uploading the master pages basically as to the right location. And then we are actually able to use CSUM to set the master page or set the supported or allowed page layouts, or supported page layouts in a site, and also the default page layouts within a site. And we're able to use the CSUM to set also allowed site templates. So if you need to, for example, limit the visibility of a available subsite templates in a publishing scenario or in a publishing site collections, you're able to do that using CSUM APIs as well. One note on that one, though, is that obviously, if you really want to build that enterprise scale solution where you actually deploy all of your assets and all of your branding elements automatically whenever somebody is creating a site, that's when you don't actually set the allowed site templates. You rather override the subsite creation experience. And we're going to talk about that one in a slightly different video, but that's a really important thing to realize. Because we don't recommend web templates or site templates to be used either for actually basically on a similar maintenance challenges case as with the custom master page case. So let's actually have a look on this kind of a summary of the branding options. So what are those options, what we have available, and how they reflect from a supportability perspective, flexibility perspective, and also from a cost perspective. If we start with the smallest customization, we have the Office 365 themes. You're able to actually use your browser to centrally control these settings in Office 365 level. You can also override this in a site level if you're using SharePoint themes for those sites. But the obvious downside of this one is that it's only for Office 365. It's not available in on-premises. The flexibility is fair or really small, and the cost impact is really small because it's a browser-based click-through UI where you're able to control those settings. The theming option is absolutely valid. That's supported in Office 365 and on-premises as well. You control branding, fonts, and background image on the site. And the configuration is applied on each site, which is a really important thing to realize. You cannot actually apply theme across the whole site collection using one command. And that might be or might not be a challenge. It slightly, again, depends on the exact use cases, what you're using and what you're having. And obviously the cost impact is a slightly smaller. Well, it's bigger than in Office 365 things, but it's not yet super impactful. It's not yet really, really huge impact from a cost perspective. Then the third option is to alternate CSS. You can override whatever CSS settings or add additional CSS settings to the site rendering. You can control colors, fonts, and even layout settings or layout changes. And what we mean with that one is that you're able to use the CSS to control individual elements or their visibility within the rendered or the user interface. Configuration is applied to each site, so that's kind of the same challenge as within the SharePoint themes. And the supported Office 365 flexibility is more than within the themes. The cost impact is pretty much the same, because from a maintainability perspective, you need to control this in a site level, like the theming settings. And then the final option is the custom master page. You have full control what is actually rendered. Flexibility is absolutely unlimited. Supported in Office 365, cost impact is, however, bigger. Initial creation of the custom master page takes much longer, typically, and also you have that additional maintenance challenge which you might face in the future of the sites. The deployment is slightly dependent. Are you using a collaboration site or are you actually using publishing features? With the publishing features, it's a one master page in a site collection level, which controls or you are able to push that to all of the subsites as well. In the collaboration sites, that's not the case. So you need to actually deploy the master page to every single site in a similar way as with the alternate CSS option or the theming option. So four different options. All of them have advantages and disadvantages, and the flexibility is dependent on the chosen option. Key point is to make the decision knowingly, that you really know what is the impact, long-term impact and a short-term impact of that chosen pattern. And you can mix and match this as well. So you could actually take the alternate CSS and a custom master page with minimal changes within a master page level, if you need to do slightly more than what the alternate CSS can actually introduce. So let's talk about then updating branding on existing sites. And this is the follow-up scenario. Now that we have the master page deployed, now that we have alternate CSS deployed, now that we have whatever assets deployed, how do I actually maintain them? So how do I update those branding elements across all of the sites if there are new business requirements? Because this is pretty common scenario. It's pretty common that business or companies are doing small modifications from a branding perspective, and therefore you need to then make sure that you're able to apply these changes across your site collection. So how do we do this? Is that we really want to think about what do we deploy. So trying to get, for example, the static elements like images, CSS files, and JavaScript into one location and reference them from all of the sites with a relative path or as an absolute path to the content delivery network. The elements which have to be stored in the site collection level can be updated by looping through the site collections and updating them one by one using then the remote provisioning model. And it's absolutely true that means that you need to actually loop through all of the sites and site collections to make that change happen. So it's not precisely the same story. If you used farm solutions in the on-premises, you might have had one place in the 15 hive to modify a master page, and that would have reflected the change to all of the site collections. And that's not the case within the add-in model or app model. You can run that loop, but if you have, for the key point here to understand is that this running the loop and updating the site collections one by one doesn't mean that the site collections are offline. they're all available all the time, so you're able to push those new master pages in or customizations in and apply them one by one within the site collection level. And there's no downtime for the end users. It's absolutely true, though, that these site collections could be then in a different branding version level until this loop of all of those, let's say, 200,000 site collection has already completed. And really, the time what it actually takes is highly dependent on what kind of branding elements you are applying to these site collections. If you are applying a theming engine and custom theming, that actually is pretty time-consuming operation. If you're just uploading a CSS and adding that CSS or adding just the CSS reference, that doesn't actually take that long in an individual site level. The second point on the previous slide was to really think about where do we actually put those files. So as an example, you're able to put the CSS and JavaScript files and images to a one centralized location. That could be a CDN, that could be a or that could be a provider hosted application which is hosting those, or it could be, well, whatever centralized content delivery network capability. And so you don't actually deploy them to every single site collection. And this way, you do actually have a one location or one place where you can go and modify the JavaScript file or CSS file or PNG files, and then the end users are reflected by that change. There, you need to be also, however, aware of the impact of the client-side caching. So that's something what to consider. The browsers quite often cache these static pages. So you need to be aware, you need to have a capability to reset that cache in a client side. And quite common, one of the options, for example, is to use the content delivery networks and then have there the control whether you want to actually flush the client side cache or what's the life cycle explicitly for those items which are cached in the browser side. Good, that closes up on our session. So the recommendations were to avoid custom master pages. You hopefully know the reasoning. We're not saying not support it, we're saying avoid for the sake of those maintenance costs. If you're willing to take those costs, that's absolutely fine. Use Office 365 themes where possible. That's the most cost-efficient option. Consider using alternate CSS rather than custom master pages. It's a good option. And the theming can be also used, and that controls color and font. We're not going to actually take any questions during the video recording. The key point of also within the demo samples, all of the demos and all of the much more material is available from the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices, which also applies for on-premises. So aka MS Office Dev PMP, and then we have quite a few sub-addresses as well, where you're able to find videos and training materials and MSDN links as well. Oh yeah, and the Yammer group, which is highly active place to get support for any of the questions within the adding model. If you can only remember one address, please do remember the dev.office.com. So you can, it's a one location where you're able to get find all the needed information to get started with the adding model development. And it's really important that you give us feedback. We are on this journey together, and we want to hear you. We want to hear what is your pain point. We want to hear what's actually working and what's not working. So please go to Office 365 Network to have a discussion with the Microsoft people over there. We have the Stack Overflow and the user voice to provide suggestions, whatever you want to have within the future versions. And that's all we're going to do within this video. So thanks for your time, and keep on going on the journey of heading to the adding model and app model with SharePoint and Office 365. Thanks.